very genome-based vaccine that's being run is basically an RNA-based vaccine design. But they're throwing DNA designs, they're throwing protein designs, they're doing just about everything you can imagine doing. Every organization is doing probably a couple of things simultaneously. They've taken a look at the genetic sequence, deciphered what proteins it codes for, looked in their cross references whether there is any agent that's already been researched that effectively blocks the mechanism for that protein. And for the ones that they don't have anything, they're going back from scratch to build designer antiviral drugs. So everything is getting used for this onslaught.
Okay, Roger. The approach we're taking, at least one of the approaches, we are participants in one of the, actually two of the trials with the patient cohort that we have. But the approach we're taking is to isolate neutralizing antibodies from serum, and then to conduct infectivity tests with those.
Okay, that's good. The more the merrier. There is a lot of time, money, and people's brains being dedicated to get rid of this damn thing. Which is good, but you know there are some things that you can speed up and some things you can't. Hopefully looking at every possible avenue available will save us from hitting dead ends, which no doubt we will have. There will be a lot of studies that end up showing nothing good, but if you throw a lot of studies out there and they're all well designed, maybe we'll find a few that will be particularly good that we could use for everyone. That's the dream.
Right, so we're using the same approach that we've used for Ebola, and it's shown promise in making neutralizing antibodies for that. Anyway, back to Ned, and thanks very much for the update.
You're welcome. And, you know, I mean, we learn from every pandemic. Some people kind of mentioned on the radio that we haven't had a pandemic. We've had lots of pandemics. Bird flu, swine flu, Ebola, and SARS and MERS and other things. So we've had lots of pandemics, unfortunately. And in some ways we learn from the way that we handle the previous ones. I hope we take home a lot of lessons with this particular one and don't repeat history once again. Anyone with any questions or comments, we're coming up to Space Report. I still have one article I'd like to mention about an antiviral agent that's been in the news that people might be interested in hearing about.
When are we going to nuke China?
Well, I would suggest that you ask that at 12:07 for the political net. The trouble is, if you nuke a country that has nukes, chances are you get nuked. But again, I would save that all for the political net later tonight. Anyway. There's growing, if still very preliminary, evidence that the experimental antiviral drug remdesivir can be effective against COVID-19 and the coronavirus that causes it. This past Thursday, Stat News reported that researchers at the University of Chicago have seen early encouraging results from ongoing phase 3 clinical trials of the drug on severely sick COVID-19 patients. University of Chicago researchers are studying 125 patients as part of their contribution to the trial, which is being funded by the makers of remdesivir, that's Gilead Sciences. According to a presentation from one of the university's study's authors obtained by Stat, many of those given the drug so far have recovered quickly with only 2 deaths. Meanwhile, a paper released last week in the New England Journal of Medicine reported that a slight majority of severe COVID-19 patients, that being 36 out of 53, given remdesivir on a compassionate use basis, recovered after the treatment. These results, promising as they are far from definitive proof of remdesivir's effectiveness. There are other arms of the trial being run at other hospitals and universities, and the full data is not yet out. Neither the New England Journal of Medicine published study nor the Gilead trial at the University of Chicago include a placebo-controlled group for comparison, a key aspect of high-quality scientific evidence. Other trials, including remdesivir, do plan to have a control group, though, and more large-scale data from this drug and other potential treatments should be on the way soon. Researchers at the Stanford University School of Medicine tested throat swab samples taken from patients in the state for a new coronavirus, as we all know, it's SARS-CoV-2 called, that, as well as for common cold and flu viruses. Of the 116 samples that tested positive for SARS-CoV-2, 20% also tested positive for another virus. These co-infections most often involved cold bugs, such as rhinoviruses and or enteroviruses. The findings, while small and isolated to one area of the country, are concerning because earlier research from China has suggested that co-infections were very rare. One reason that's important is because doctors in the U.S. have been advised to test patients for other respiratory viruses as a way to rule out COVID-19, given the lack of accessible testing for the coronavirus. Let me drop for a sec. But the presence of another virus may not provide reassurance that the patient does not also have SARS-CoV-2, the authors wrote. Further research will have to continue tracking how commonly co-infections are happening and whether they pose any other challenges, such as increasing the risk of severe symptoms. In a study published this past week in Science, researchers from the Netherlands and Germany reported that cynomolgus macaques can be exposed to the coronavirus and develop a mild infection, similar to people. Older macaques had longer infections and more symptoms than younger ones. Those symptoms were mild across the board. They also seemed capable of spreading the infection to other monkeys, even if they weren't sick, much as people are able to spread the virus asymptomatically. The findings could mean that scientists can use these primates as a more precise staging ground for testing out future COVID-19 vaccines and treatments. Some ethicists and scientists have raised concerns about the lack of preclinical testing for many of the potential therapies that are already being tried out on people. While mice and rodents have shown promise as animal models for COVID-19, using animals that are more similar to humans should make it easier for researchers to catch any potential risk of an experimental drug before it reaches human trials. Let me drop for any questions or comments. This is AC2GS.
NY2H.
AC2PM.
Okay, Lou first.
Yeah, the Earth's atmosphere. I think they were into control group trials, maybe phase three trials, because I read that they had 2,000 in the study, and now they're going to increase that population to 6,000, from 2,000 to 6,000. And the inference was that they're probably not getting fantastic results, because if they were with the 2,000, they would have brought the placebo group over, you know, compassionately. And the fact that they're going to 6,000 may indicate that they're not getting the ratio of success that they want to show. So that was a pretty recent article. So maybe that was later than the one that you're citing.
Okay, Lou, thanks for the info. This is all moving targets. And none of this is kind of the last 10 minutes of news. I mean, this is the fastest moving news story I've ever seen or heard. The problem, again, people kind of have a binary sensibility for things like antivirals. There, unfortunately, can be antivirals that are slightly effective. You know, it ranges all the way from totally ineffective to somewhat effective to reasonably effective to very effective to ridiculously extremely effective. And you got to do studies before you know where they are. And if we find something that's much more effective than remdesivir, probably everyone's going to tool up to produce that other antiviral rather than remdesivir. But it's a good idea to have parallel studies because that you can also compare to each other so that you know exactly which antiviral is more effective than another given antiviral. Yeah, there was another person who wanted to say something.
Thanks, Roy. Jeff, AC2PL. The study that I read, actually two studies, both indicated that mice are not infected by the virus and do not transmit it, whereas cats and ferrets both do. And that study is a very small cohort of animals, but was conducted in a Chinese group. And then there was a bioinformatics study that showed the same thing based on the sequence analysis of the ACE2 protein in a variety of animals, but was consistent with the actual lab study. So I'd actually like to know if there's a mouse model that does have infectivity, because if so, we'd like to use it.
Okay, I will look it up. Most likely all labs have mouses, and if not infecting the person with the virus, they try the agent and see whether it causes any problems to the mice. But I understand similar that cats and there was a story about a tiger in the zoo who tested positive for COVID-19. So cats can get it. Dogs, I don't believe the general consensus is that dogs can manifest the infection. They have found viral particles on dogs, but they believe that they were contaminants from their owners.
Yeah, Roger. The study that I'm quoting also tested dogs, sheep, pigs, and I think ducks. And dogs were very low infectivity rate, whereas the farm animals had none, and cats and ferrets were essentially, and ferrets are actually used as a human model, so that's well known. But if we could get our hands on a mouse line that does show infection, that would be very, very useful to us in our animal studies.
Yes, indeed. Mice, a lot of biology labs kind of live by their collection of genetically engineered variants of mice. So if you can get it down to something quick and easy like that, that would make things a lot easier. I would agree with you. Anyone else with any questions or comments on this subject or any before I shut the door on this and give it over to Paul for the space report? Unfortunately, that's about 80% noise, so if you could kind of either reposition your handy-talky antenna or crank up the power output on your radio, I'd appreciate it. Again, I'm getting only about 30% of what you say. Okay, very good. I hope that I was able to offer people some cogent information and lessen the confusion and lessen, hopefully, the suspicion and lessen, to a degree, the panic. If I accomplished any of those, then it's a good thing. I want to remind everyone, as I do every single week, if you have any mailbag questions and you can't ask them on the technical net, If you have any topics you want to have addressed of a technical nature about radio technology or what have you, if you have any science questions or science topics or articles that you read that you would like to discuss, if you would like me to pass on anything to Paul, if you see something on a webpage or an article and you would like to see Paul's opinion of it, the email address that gets to me as fast as any other is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. And as always, I have a link page. It is roy.ac2gs.com. And it'll have links to the articles that I cited in the stories tonight. And as always, I want to thank everyone who participated tonight because, you know, you don't want to just hear me ramble on. So thanks to everyone who participated, and I hope you'll come back and join us next Sunday night when we do it all over again. And now let me pass it over to Paul, WS2N, for the space report.
Okay, Roy, what space are you trying to get in? Right as you were starting to talk on the last transmission.
Okay, I'm sorry if I doubled with you. If you want to try and ask your question again, please feel free. Okay, thanks. Paul, as time has gone on, you went from almost full quieting to about 30% noise. So if you can kind of tweak that rotator a little bit, and I'll tell you when you're sounding better.
I know, this is very directional. How's this now? 10 degrees difference.
That's a little bit better. You want to try for a little bit more, and we'll see if it gets better or worse.
Okay, I'm going to turn it a little further, see how this does.
I would put it back to where it was the last time. That should be okay.
Okay, and we're back. Testing.
Okay, that's good. There's about 10% noise in the background, but that's fine.
Okay, very good. I'm going through the Eastern repeater. Very good. Okay, let me just start off with a topic I talked about last week and the week before, but I didn't have a good website to go to. This has to do with Rocket Lab. Rocket Lab is a company that is registered in the United States. It's owned by this guy, Peter Beck. And he's been launching these rockets for, almost 2 years now. And he's launched about 10 rockets. And as time goes on, there's less time in between each launch. He's doing pretty good. He's launching these rockets from New Zealand. In fact, Peter Beck was born in New Zealand. And he's presently building a launch complex in the United States as well, in Virginia. But his goal is to recover these rockets. He'll send the satellite up, and he wants to recover the boosters. I know SpaceX does that all the time. They've become experts at it now. This company would like to do it for different reasons, though. He needs the boosters because he has a lot of launches on his manifest. So he's make them only so fast. This way you save them and launch them again, it'll be better off. So he hasn't done it yet, but his goal is to, launch a rocket from, it will be from New Zealand, and launch a rocket, and a booster is going to come down on a parachute, and a helicopter is supposed to come by and grab it out of the sky, and then land the...
Thank you.
successfully do his practice test, which he successfully did a couple of weeks ago for the advent of the virus. Now, of course, the virus is going to slow the work down, but he was successful in carrying a booster up with another helicopter. And then having another helicopter fly nearby, that one had a hook on it, and they dropped the booster, full-size booster, with no fuel in it, of course, duplicating an empty tank. And the other helicopter came by, pulled it out of the air, and then, in this case, because they were near the near land, they took the booster back to land. Now, it turns out there's a video for this, and this information on the company itself, and I put this roy.82gs website. Read all the information about what's going on with Rocket Lab and their boosters. And then you scroll down and you'll see another link to the YouTube that they put out. So it's the Rocket Lab YouTube with their Electron rocket. They call it the Electron rocket. And it's a nice video of them successfully doing this. And the next step, of course, will be to actually launch one of their rockets that they normally do, and actually do this with the boost that's coming back. That's probably a couple of months away. So the Electron rocket is engines in there. They're called Rutherford engines. They're 3D printed, manufactured in the United States, in California, and they run there. Turbo pumps that normally pump the fuel into the system instead of using drive the turbo pumps. He's got 50 horsepower motors, each one on each engine. He's got 9 turbos, and then he's got electric motors that are run on lithium batteries, and that's how he does it. And he's able to cut the course down with that system.
Country or
somebody that needs to launch. He's already launched payloads for NASA. So, you know, they say, well, we need one on a certain date, and this guy is, you know, very reliable. He doesn't have to, you know, if you sign up with another company like SpaceX, you know, SpaceX will say, well, okay, we'll put your 200-pound satellite on our, you know, 8,000-pound satellite that's going up to Jupiter, they're going to absorb it, and, you know, you can go for a ride, but you might not get the inclination you want. You might not get the time that you need to have it go up. You might have to wait 2 years. This guy could, you know, probably sign you up and launch your rocket in 3 months. So that's his deal. And he is building the complex in Wallops Island, Virginia, for multiple launches, and he's building another launch complex in New Zealand as well. So officially, he'll have three places to launch rockets. There's a demand for the smaller payloads to go up. Let me drop it. Okay, another topic. I mentioned last week that we were going to have two Americans come down and one Russian from the International Space Station. The goal was to land in Kazakhstan, the steps of Kazakhstan, that's where the Soyuz vehicles come back and land. One guy, Drew Morgan, he was up there for 9 months or so, and Jessup Meir, another American, was up there for maybe 6 months, and they came down with the Russian pilot, Oleg Skibarovka, and, you know, from Roscosmos. Roscosmos is, you know, instead of NASA, you have Roscosmos, so he flew the... television. They didn't have that. They didn't have any crews out there to do that. To scout to the coronavirus. And they were met with doctors. I mean, tents and, you know, met to get a medical treatment. Isolated for a couple of weeks with another medical crew, and they'll watch over them. You know, you would think, well, they could go home with their family, just wear a mask or something, but no, they're challenged when you go up in space for 6 months with affects your immune system, so they are worried about not only them getting the coronavirus, but affecting them, you know, in a dangerous way. You know, they become one of the possible statistics. You know, people that are overweight, people that have diabetes and all. Well, if you have a bad immune system, you know, that would not be a good thing to catch the virus. So they'll be isolated for a couple of weeks. Eventually, they'll be able to go home. And meanwhile, what happened was there was another launch right before that, and that crew went up, and now they are occupying the... now, commander of three on the International Space Station. And they were isolated before they went up. In Russia before they were launched. So this way, you know, they make sure that nothing gets gets up there, they want the virus up there. In a week or two, you have a Progress ship going up to the space station that's probably super sterilized before that thing goes up. Usually, you know, they tend to do that anyway. But I'm sure they went overboard the last mission. Station from a cargo vehicle. That's not what we're doing, I'm sure. So that's the story on that. Any questions or comments? This is WSUM.
N2HVR with a question about the ISS.
Company on, you know, from Brooklyn. This company, I talked about this thing back in November. Was they called the Launcher Rocket Company. I know it's a boring name, but that's the name of it. And it comes out of Brooklyn, New York. The fella, Max Horton, that he's the chief executive of this company. And he's been, you know, he made this engine for his, you know, eventually a rocket that he'll be building. Again, small rocket, you know, launch company. He hasn't launched any rockets yet, but he needs a place to test his rocket engine. And
Estes.
Calverton. He had a spot there, but he built a rocket test van just to test the engine that he's building. But Brooklyn company, they got a military contract, you know, from the government. He's got some extra money to work with, and now he's made a deal to go to Stennis, Mississippi. Stennis, Mississippi is the, you know, that's like the best place in the world to test rocket engines. You know, everybody's gone there. NASA has bought, you know, Apollo engines there and Saturn V engines to test. And, SpaceX tested the engines there. Now this guy, even though it's a small engine, he's got a be able to use one of their test facilities in Mississippi. Now he doesn't have to worry about the noise. He was worried about, you know, as rocket engines were getting busy, bit bigger, he was worried about the noise out in Calverton, Long Island. So he no longer has to worry about that. So I'd like to eventually see him, you know, do something. Got this $1.5 million. Dollar grant from the U.S. Air Force to continue on. So, I know he's got this reliable engine that he's built. It's only about like 3 feet tall, but it's all 100%, you know, all being done in Brooklyn, New York, W.S. Rocket One. You know, you think you'd have both
duct tape SDs rocket engines.
The launcher company and Rocket One is supposed to be his rocket. He expects to, once he gets these engines straightened out, he plans on running the engine. Drop it, see if anybody has any comments. Okay, here's another company I probably mentioned once or twice. Intuitive Machines, name of it. And they're building a lunar lander. So, you don't have the capability to launch them. Their lander. Their goal is to
landed in an area where if there was a...
How about Rocket Man?
To Apollo 17, if there was an Apollo 18 mission. They have actually approval from the government to do this. The company has been around for a while. I remember years ago, they had another name. The people I worked for had a different name. And they were launching from down in Florida. It's called the Morpheus Project. And you would see these
ground control to Major Tom.
And to be able to land in a precise location, they would put big rocks all over the place and took pictures and had, you know, like artificial intelligence could look down and take dozens of pictures a second, and it would be able to figure out, okay, there's a rock there, and it would, you know, go left, right, and next thing you know, it would land, and they did this, you know, time and time again. It was called the Morpheus Project. Well, now it's morphed into the Novacy Project. So they have, their first launch will be by SpaceX on Falcon 9. From Launch Complex 39A, and they even have a date, October 11th, 2021. So next year, it'll, you know, a year and a half from now, they plan on launching to the moon and landing. And NASA is helping out with the bills because they need private companies to be able to do this for multiple reasons, you know, and eventually they'll be bringing cargo and everything else. They have really have crews on, you know, on a moon on a permanent basis. This is one of the private companies that actually has a date to do such a thing. Any questions or comments about Intuitive Machine? WS. Okay, here's another one I talk about on a regular basis. This will be going up. Just like you have Curiosity riding around on Mars, now you have Perseverance. And I talked about the helicopter that they're bringing up. Now they've actually attached the helicopter to the underbody of the rover. And the blades are long. I mean, the blades are 4 feet long. There's two blades.
Ground control to Major Tom.
The RPMs are going to be like 50 RPMs for second. I mean, it's really going to be long. And they need to do that because the density of the air is so thin, it's less than 1% of what we have here on Earth. So, they'll be able to fly an electric helicopter with a solar panel on top of both blades to recharge itself so they're reflying. And the thing only weighs, the whole helicopter weighs 4 pounds. Got two cameras on board. And they plan on eventually dropping it off. They'll be on the bottom of the bottom of the rover. They'll drop it off, and then the rover will drive away and get around, 100 meters away, so, you know, like 300 feet away. And then that will be the first time the helicopter will fly. I hope they set it up where the camera takes a picture of the rover sitting on Mars. I think that would be great. And they plan for a minimum of 5 flights with the rover. And, naturally, the rover survives. You know, they'll keep doing it over and over again. NASA's real good at that. They'll say, well, we're going to do something, we'll leave it up there for a month. We Meanwhile, you know, 6 months later, they're still doing it. That's what happened with the other two solar power rovers, Spirit and Opportunity. They were supposed to go up there, and they were going to be happy if it lasted 3 months. One lasted 6 years, and the other one, you know, almost 14 years. So, yeah, so, you know, I could imagine the blade spinning at almost, they say around 2,500 RPM. That's what it would be. So, if you have a helicopter on Earth, it would, you know, the blades that would actually be spinning 10 times faster than what you would normally see. So it's really hauling. So there must be some electric motors on this thing. It would be equivalent to flying a helicopter. Let's say you had a helicopter 40,000 feet, you know, above, where a jetliner would fly. You know, you have a very thin atmosphere up there. So, that would be the record for that's the altitude record for a helicopter, 40,000 feet. So this would be like way above that. Like 100,000 feet or something. Very thin air. I think it's a little less than 1% of the atmosphere on Earth. And that's real thin. That's why you would definitely need a spacesuit if you're on Mars. So any questions or comments about the rover and the helicopter? Okay, another Mars story. The Insight mission is on Mars. Been up there about a year and a half now. Insight is the interior exploration using seismic investigation, geodesy, and heat transport. The Insight mission. And their main goal is to find out what Mars is made of, what's it like inside the surface of the planet. They have the seismometer they put on a planet early on. That's been working great. They can detect any earthquake or a little meteorite hits the planet anywhere. They think so sensitive to detect that. They're still working on their heat. Mole that's supposed to drill itself 15 feet into the surface of the planet, and then, you know, once it did that, they would be able to take heat measurements and then extrapolate that all the way into the core of the planet. Unfortunately, that still has not worked. They still think they have a shot at doing it. And that the surface was much than was predicted. You know, a lot of granular, loose surface near the top, and they can't get enough friction to all the molars, and supposedly pounds itself into the surface of the planet. But what I wanted to talk about was the magnetic field. They have a magnetic detector on board. And the purpose of it was just to actually null out, get rid of, you know, any magnetic interference in the area, so it wouldn't affect, you know, other instruments on the lander. Now, this lander, by the way, is not on wheels; it's just on a tripod, you know, sitting on the surface. It's not going anywhere, but this magnetic gadget, they're using it as a detector now. They're able to figure out that whatever's underneath it's got a magnetic field, and it's 10 times stronger than what they had predicted. So scientists are looking into that. So it's another example of, you know, some piece of equipment that's on a spacecraft that wasn't planned to use, you know, for a certain purpose, and they now are using it for. So, any questions or comments? If not, we're come to a grinding halt here. I'll see if there's any questions. If not, we're going to go back to ECTGS. This is WS2N for the SpaceNet report for the TechNet.
Quick general question, JC1SAM.
Okay, Sam, how you doing? KC1FAM, WS2N.
Yeah, good. How you doing? Hey, you maybe was brought up at some time, but I don't remember. I hear launching from pad 39A or B or something. Whatever happened to pads 1 through 38?
Yeah, they've all evolved over time. For instance, you'll see Elon Musk, well, he launches from two pads now. One is 39A, and that's the one where the crew will be launched on May, I think I got a date, May, toward the end of May. You have Benkin and another guy, they're gonna go launch on the crew vehicle, the International Space Station. That's 39A. 39B will be used for the SLS, the Space Launch System, and the Orion system eventually. That will be going to either the Moon or Mars or both, and that's being built by NASA. 39A and 39B will both use in the shuttle area, you know, maybe 60 or so flights from 39A, another 40, another 50 or 60 from B. So that's what they were used for. Now, Launch Complex 39B will also be used for the new Northrop Grumman rocket called Omega. Omega is another massive rocket. 300 feet tall. You know, it's got solid. The whole thing is a solid fuel system that they're building. That should go off in about a year and a half or so. So now, you know, you work your way down. They're the main ones you got, or up. You have Launch Complex 40. That's another one that SpaceX has taken over, Launch Complex 40. They also launch Falcon 9 rockets from that. Launch Complex 41 is used by the Atlas V rocket at this time, and that's by United Launch. And Lockheed Martin, they teamed up together, and they're the ones that launched the Atlas V rocket. That goes out of Launch Complex 41. Let me drop it. Further south, down, you know, the Florida chain, you come across the other launch complexes, Launch Complex 36. You know, they use that for, that was used for the surveyor missions and things like that back in the Apollo days. Pre-Apollo days, before they landed on the moon, surveyors landed six vehicles on the moon. Well, you know, all these launch complexes, a lot of them were sitting idle for many years. Launch Complex 36 now being taken over by Blue Origin. Blue Origin has got another like 300-plus foot rocket head building. It's called the New Glenn. That will be launched from Launch Complex 36. And you go all the way down the line. You know, some of them are still abandoned. A couple of them are from the Gemini days. You know, they used to launch the Titan rockets. You take another launch complex, like Launch Complex 13, which was, I think that was the one that launched the John Glenn from. Pretty sure I'll have to check that one. But 13 is that's long gone. SpaceX took over and he built two landing facilities, two gigantic concrete landing facilities. So you know, you'll see if they launch a Falcon 9 Heavy from Launch Complex 39, and they have these two boosters that are going to come back and land on land. Dramatically done a couple of years ago. It was 2 years ago on February 6th. And these two boosters, that was the first time they did it. The two boosters came back and landed on the pads right in the dead center. So that was originally Launch Complex 13.
That was all demolished. Now you just got these two landing pads that SpaceX has taken over. And they go on and on. And, some of them just, or not used anymore. They had all those at one time. The early ones, 1, 2, 3, 4, were, sounding rockets. They wouldn't even go into orbit. And, back to you, Sam. KC-1SAMW-S2S.
Okay, you never hear anything about them, so some are still there, just being used for other purposes for other guys, other companies. Interesting. Yeah, I wondered what happened, because you only hear the 39 these days. That's the big number. Curious. Appreciate KC-1SAM. Thanks, Paul.
Yeah, Neil Armstrong, they launched all the manned missions to the moon, launched from Launch Complex 39A. Some of the practice ones, like Apollo 7, that was the first crew that went up to orbit the Earth to test out the Apollo mission. They launched from Launch Complex 39B. And you have two areas. You have Kennedy Space Center, that's 39A, 39B. And what it would eventually at one time be, it was going to be 39C, but they never built it. That's all part of, Cape Kennedy. But then south of that, you have 40 and numbers down. That would be Air Force Base. The difference between the Air Force Base and Kennedy. And that was the real difference. But it's really pretty much all one location. Right off Merritt Island. Any questions or comments? But this is WS2N. So it should be pretty exciting in May. And I can't imagine with this coronavirus. I expected like a million people to be out at Cocoa Beach, on the shores, watching the first, two men take off from Launch Complex 39A in May. Now what are they going to do? I mean, are they going to have Florida shut down? Nobody allowed on the beach. It's going to be strange. And first time we've, got a big launch like this, but the last manned launch was the Atlantis shuttle, and that was in July of 2011. Here we are all these years later. It's going to be a big event. I don't know how they're going to handle it. I mean, is the country really going to be open to have a million people on the shore at that time? I don't think so. It's going to be weird. Any questions? Okay, now we'll turn it back to Roy. We'll stand by here. We'll just find, time to ask questions. If you have anything for me or Roy, go ahead. And if not, I guess we'll come to a grinding halt. That's up to Roy. AC2GS, this is WS2N. I'll be on tomorrow night on the Club InfoNet on multiple repeaters. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, thank you very much, Paul. Just want to remind everyone, I put up all the links, so if you're interested in any of the articles, topics that I covered, you can click, go to roy.ac2gs.com and click on the links and read to your heart's content. And again, if you have any technical questions that you would like to pose that you can't get on to the TechNet, or topics you would like discussed, or if you have any science topics, or if you have any puzzlers to offer me, or if you want me to pass some information over to Paul, the email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. gentleman emailed me that he wants to go back to the days of radio technology. And my answer to him is, then ask me a radio question. And please feel free, anyone out there, ask me a radio question at the beginning of the technical mess. And again, I want to thank everyone who participated. There were people I agreed with. There were people I didn't agree with. And that's all good and healthy. And I think the exchange of ideas and opinions are great. We should have different opinions. We shouldn't have different facts. And again, I want to thank everyone who participated tonight. And as always, here's a little bit of wisdom from one of the wisest men that I know, Dick K2RIW, and that is, be kind to each other. And please, take that to heart. So this is AC2GS, Roy. This has been the Limark Technical Net, and we'll be back next Sunday night at 8 o'clock to do it all over again. So I wish you all a safe and healthy week, and I'll see you again next time. So this is AC2GS, and I'll be going clear.
Tonight at 8 o'clock, this is the W2VL Repeater Net. Time complete.
Tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL Repeater. The time is 12:04 a.m. 73, and good night from the W2VL Repeater. The time is 12:04 a.m. 73, and good night from the W2VL Repeater. Tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL Repeater. That tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL Repeater.
that tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. That tonight at 8:30.